The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Did you know that one child in every 88 has been identified with an autism spectrum disorder called ASD, according to the CDC? It's five times more common in boys than girls, and most children aren't diagnosed until the age of four. Well, how do these children function in the school setting, and how do the parents handle the stress while caring for them? Today, we'll learn about that. We're going to hear about a girl's tools for coping in the school setting from author Carrie Dunn Buron, who wrote the book Adeline's Claire. And one mother who has an adult son with Asperger's will tell us how she survives. Let us first talk with Kara. I am here talking with Carrie Dunn Buron, who has written the book Adeline's Claire. Is that the correct way to pronounce his Adeline?
Yes, Adeline.
Adeline's Claire. It was a wonderful book that I read pretty much in one sitting. And at first, I was like, I don't know that I want to read this because it looks like it might be sad. But then it wasn't. So I was enthralled with it, and I can't wait to give it over to my 8-year-old grandson, who I think will really enjoy it.
So, oh, good. I think so, too.
Yes. You have quite a bit of insight into writing about what it's like. So, because our listeners, most of them haven't read it yet, how about you give us a summary of the book?
Okay, I'd love to. Adeline is a highly anxious fourth grader, and Claire is her social therapy dog. Her teacher, her special ed teacher, has brought the social therapy dog, Claire, in to help Adeline in two ways, one to relax and another to find some friends. And so Adeline, because of her high anxiety level, tends to get in trouble at school.
Yes.
And she's had difficulty finding friends. So Claire is there as sort of an alternative therapy to help her with those two issues. And it's her journey with Claire, finding friends and handling her anxieties.
Mm-hmm. And she has anxieties. That is very evident.
Yes, she does.
Yes. And it sort of brings out the characteristics in the other people who she interacts with about their issues as well.
Yes.
Like the student teacher.
Yeah. What I try to illustrate in the story is that really anxiety, social shyness, and social aversions, these are all pretty much across the human spectrum. So everybody has a little bit.
Yes.
And I think especially Adeline's relationship with Mr. Hurdle, that was really, hopefully, can illustrate that Mr. Hurdle and Adeline actually had a lot in common, mm-hmm. which made it difficult for them to get along at first.
Yes. And we're going to encounter many people like that in our life when we realize that we do have things in common with each other, and maybe that's why we're having difficulty.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, sometimes it's kind of hard. It's like looking in a mirror, isn't it?
But with Adeline, she didn't have the social skills to be able to just address that.
Correct. Adeline has a problem with social thinking and social savvy. She doesn't have good social skills, which is the main problem with her ability to or inability to find friends on her own.
Mm-hmm. Would her diagnosis be autism or Asperger's?
Yes. Actually, you know, I didn't give her a diagnosis in the story.
Right.
But her character is really modeled on four girls that I have worked with Asperger's syndrome.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure that anybody familiar with Asperger's syndrome will recognize some of the characteristics.
Yes, I've got some of my former clients I've worked with that I'd like their families to get a copy of the book. So, yes.
Oh, wonderful. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, because one of the things that I found in working with Asperger's patients, clients, whatever they may be, students, when they have something to say, they're just going to tell you.
Yes.
Whether it's appropriate or not. So, I looked at your biography and some of the other books you've written seem to address that there are certain things you cannot say or do.
Academically, I do write books that would be called social cognitive approaches to understanding just the subtle nature of social interaction, what things are okay and what really, really cannot be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get you in trouble in the long run.
Right. And for people that have this diagnosis, they have many things that we take for granted that don't come easy for them. And oftentimes people will look at them and judge them without knowing how difficult it is for them just to be in society.
Yes. Yes, I think that that's a real important piece. And actually, I'm hopeful that the book will help children gain some understanding for possibly tantrum behavior that they might observe in school, tantrum behavior from a student who's way older than someone you would typically see have a tantrum, that it's really, to understand that it's really a result of this social anxiety and this inability to cope with the emotions that the person is feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So by reading the story, hopefully they will really like Adeline, and so that can help them to develop their own sense of empathy.
Mm-hmm. I can see Adeline growing up to become another Temple Grandin.
Yes, she's very smart, isn't she?
Yes, she is, and she understands the animals as well in the science room.
Yes. Well, I think animals are just easier for her and as they were for Temple.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Is Temple still doing things, do you know, creating research and explaining things to the rest of us?
Temple is still working as an instructor in Colorado and still doing her work with animals and the livestock industry.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
Yeah.
One of the favorite shows I like to watch is The Big Bang Theory. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the character Sheldon, I think, might have some Asperger's syndrome, the character of him.
Yeah, actually, I would tend to agree with that. And one of the things that I like about the example of the Big Bang Theory is that sometimes people say, well, is Asperger's syndrome just a brainy kid, you know, just a sort of nerdy character? But if you watch the Big Bang Theory, all of the guys in that group are pretty nerdy and smart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all physicists and high-level scientists, but only Sheldon is really and truly kind of over that line.
Yes.
He's quirky even for that group of characters.
Yes.
So it's a good illustration mm-hmm. for somebody who's having difficulty understanding, well, where does Asperger's syndrome come in and just being smart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a movie that came out about 2 or 3 years ago called Adam that was about Asperger's. And
yeah.
it was very helpful for me to see just what somebody goes through and then how he progressed to get beyond the primary relationship, how he handled that. And that was very good for me, very instructive for me who works with some Asperger's. Clients.
Yeah, you know, I think what's really interesting about that, you know, bring up that movie and just the idea of social competence, that it's a developmental issue.
Yes.
So if somebody has Asperger's syndrome, they're simply behind. It doesn't mean that that's not going to happen.
Right.
The skills are still, you know, likely to develop given the right environment and instruction.
And I think that is important, instruction, because many of them don't know when they've made a faux pas and until somebody points it out to them. Oh, I can't say that. Oh, okay. You know, they need the instruction, the guidance. Just
exactly.
like you would with a 4 or 5 year old. No, you can't do that in kindergarten. That's not acceptable. So.
Right. And it gets dicier as it gets older because it
yes.
gets very personal.
Yes.
I think that kids who are having difficulties in that area, really, they get that they're not getting it, and yet they don't know what they're doing wrong. So it becomes very personal, and then you have to be a little more creative in how you go about helping and supporting somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and for many that I've worked with, they don't have just one thing they're dealing with. They have some other diagnoses as well, some OCD characteristics, some social phobias, some sensitivity to tactile things issues. So it's not just one thing sometimes they're dealing with.
That's very true. Everything is kind of along that human spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So every, you know, little pieces, it doesn't, having one issue doesn't preclude other issues for sure.
No. Definitely not. So what became your impetus for being involved in working with people with anxiety disorders or writing about this?
Well, my history in education was almost exclusively with children who were highly anxious. I worked with highly anxious children most of the 30 years that I was in the K-12 system.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, what I really realized was that traditional methods for behavior management only went so far, and that there were issues that simply were not being addressed through a simplistic sticker program, for example. Just reward and punishment kinds of approaches just weren't getting at the core issues of many of these kids who were so highly anxious and sometimes explosive. And so what I started really becoming interested in was anxiety in general in the mainstream population. What did anxiety look like? What were we doing for a typical adult who had high levels of anxiety? Besides medication, what were some of the approaches? And then my thoughts were, could we pull those approaches into the school?
Okay, can we pause with that thought right there and take a break and come back and talk about it? All right? Thank you.
Okay.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Do you have or know someone who has multiple sclerosis, Lyme disease, or any other chronic illness? Advanced Cell Training is a restorative, self-healing modality that I, Dr. Melanie, have had phenomenal results with. reducing physical symptoms I've had for over 20 years. This process can be done right in the comfort of your own home. Request their free DVD at AdvancedCellTraining.com. That's AdvancedCellTraining.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Carrie Dunburon, author of Adeline's Claire, is enlightening us with her story of what it's like for a child with an anxiety disorder to navigate the daily school system. So let's hear some more. I am back here with Carrie Dunburon, who's talking about her book, Adeline's Claire. And what we were discussing right before the break was about anxiety issues. So you want to kind of go backtrack a bit and then pick up where we were leaving off, please.
Yes. Well, I was talking about my history in education. The bulk of my work was with young children who were highly anxious and often and sometimes explosive in school, getting themselves into trouble. What I found was that traditional behavior management strategies, the ones that I had in my own bag of tricks, weren't working. So my research really kind of went outside of special education and looked into anxiety in general. Mm-hmm. And what I found was that teaching somebody to self-regulate their bodies, teaching somebody to understand their own bodies, how their body feels when it's getting upset, can go a long way because it can help somebody excuse themselves from a difficult situation. So I started working on self-regulation, emotional regulation, looking at helping kids recognize their own anxiety in their own bodies before it got too big, before mm-hmm. they couldn't handle or suppress their own big emotions.
Good. And?
So, yeah, and I had a lot of success. I think it makes a lot of sense when you have a highly anxious child who has a social disorder that when you're asking that child to go to school, which is about the most social place on earth,
right?
That you give them some added support in the area of relaxation. So teaching somebody to relax, I don't think it's ever a mistake. I don't think it's
right.
ever wasted time because all of us can use it. So adding relaxation in a structured way to a kid's curriculum so that, like you said, or before the break, it doesn't just happen. It has to be taught.
Yes.
These are skills that really do have to be directly taught.
Mm-hmm.
And those skills were the ones I used as examples in Adeline's Claire.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I would work with children who had temper issues, and I would try to work with the school to say, all right, they know when they need a timeout. Let them walk out of the classroom. We have a set place like you did with a pup tent. Let them relax, and they'll come back in, and it won't create an issue. Well, the problem wasn't with the children. It was with the teachers, getting them to understand this will prevent an escalation if you allow them to just do this.
Right, right. Well, I think that, unfortunately, I think that we're kind of locked into this behavioral mindset where everything is sort of, if you let somebody walk out, then that's giving them their way.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to looking at something as essential as maintaining your emotions. I mean, we all know logically that as an adult, if you go out and you act out and you hurt somebody else or have a tantrum as an adult, it's likely that you're going to be arrested or in some way taken out of society.
Right.
It's probably the biggest deal ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's very hard. It's kind of a paradigm shift. It's hard for educators sometimes to understand that this skill is far more important than the skill of reading.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's against the law to discriminate against somebody who can't read. However, it's not against the law to lock somebody up who cannot get along with their neighbor. So it's a skill in life, a lifelong skill that's probably the most important. And in the past, I think we've always looked at, or at least oftentimes adults have looked at, a child who's not able to conform as it's their fault. It's somehow something they're choosing to do. And
mm-hmm.
that just doesn't make sense in
no.
the long run that somebody would start out their life just choosing to fail. It doesn't happen that way. It's a skill. Some of us are better at it, and some of us have very few social skills. And if you have few social skills, then you're more likely to get anxious when you're in a social setting, particularly when things go wrong.
Yes. Like Adeline did.
Yes, exactly. The times in the story where she doesn't cope well are times when things happen that she just, it's a social, both of them are social issues. Almost all of her challenges happen when something happens she's not expecting.
Mm-hmm. And for all of us, I think, on that continuum of anxiety, we all have anxiety issues. It just
yes.
may not manifest it in the same way.
Well, yes, it's just like the character Miles in the story when he says, well, you know, I was upset too, but it seems like Adeline was probably, you know, 10 times, 20
yes.
times more upset
yes.
than I was.
Yes. And I'm not going to give away the ending, but I liked the ending, how it was a surprise. And that
yes.
it showed that she was able to use the coping skills that had been
yes.
taught to her.
Yeah, I think in a fun way.
I
like the ending too.
Yeah. So is the dog something that's actually used, the service dog, Claire? Is there such a dog? Is there such a...
Yes, actually it's my dog,
oh.
Claire. She is a service dog. She's what they call a facility specific service dog. And when she... Back in 2004, the service dog industry here in Minnesota called. They were interested in starting some programs for kids with autism. And so in exchange for teaching their trainers about autism, they trained me and my dog, Claire, to be a service animal for both school environments and camp.
Oh.
And then Claire worked in both environments. And was amazing, and she definitely inspired the story.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people will say, well, now how do you train a dog to work with kids as a social dog? And it's a lot of it was intuitive on Claire's part. You kind of take a strength that she has, and then you work with that strength.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a lot of just regular obedience training. She's just a very well-trained dog, but on top of that, she has a ton of intuition. For example, she loved to play with squeak toys,
mm-hmm.
typical dog toys. And so she would, inside the school, I didn't allow her to have tennis balls because she just gets too crazy about tennis
right.
balls.
Right.
So she would have these squeak toys that were softer. So she would squeak it, and then she'd throw it on the lap of one child.
Aww.
And then they would squeak it and throw it back. She'd catch it in the air, squeak it, and throw it onto the lap of another child. So
Aww.
If you had a group of kids, she sort of intuitively knew to share. She would put it,
Aww.
Throw it to different kids. So it's some pretty astounding things that she would do naturally, and then we would build routines around that.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I can just picture it.
Yeah.
Well, people tend to make fun of kids like Adeline if they don't understand So what would you recommend to help lessen that?
Read the book.
Yes.
You know, actually, there is some good research that shows stories about people, heroes, characters that we like. The stories in themselves do help us to build empathy for their situation, for the type of problems that person or the issues that person might be dealing with. So, in truth, reading stories about people who face different challenges is a really, really good idea for kids. The whole teaching tolerance curriculum, which has been pretty popular, and I think a lot of schools do a really nice job of it, but I don't think that we address it enough.
Mm-hmm.
Social rejection happens very early, and the long-term consequences are severe.
Yes.
So I think we have to, as a society, I think, understand that. It's not just something that certain kids can brush off. Teasing for vulnerable children, socially vulnerable children, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's really abuse. And so just sort of saying kids will be kids, or, well, we can't really protect that kid at recess, if a child's being teased at recess, then I absolutely think that that's where that child needs support.
Okay, well,
adult support.
I think that the best answer for all of this right now is for them to get the book and to contact you for training and to read the rest of your books. So tell them how to find your books and to contact you.
Yes, they can go to my website. It's www.5.scale.com.
Okay.
Or they can go to the Autism Asperger Publishing Company website, and they can Google that. I'm not sure offhand, unfortunately.
Okay, I'll look it up.
That those two resources will get you in touch with the books that I've written, and they can certainly email me. My email address is on my website.
Wonderful. Thank you, Carrie, so much for the work you're doing and for being on my show today.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Melanie. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you, or is someone you know, struggling with life? Do you know that your subconscious beliefs play a big role in the outcome of your hard work? We can help you to permanently change your beliefs that may not be in alignment with your goals. We care about getting you a return on your investment. We can help you reach your goals easily and quickly. Contact us at BeliefMantra.com. That's BeliefMantra.com.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Now we're going to speak with a mom, Christy, about what it's like to have an adult son with Asperger's. I'm talking to a woman by the name of Christy, who has a stepson who has Asperger's. So can you tell us, Christy, what age was your son diagnosed?
19.
That's a long time to wait for a proper diagnosis. That must have been a very long, difficult journey to get there.
It was difficult for everybody.
Yeah. Not just for him, but for teachers and the family and people that he tried to interact with. That was a long journey. So
yes.
Did he have difficulty in school? Was there anything to indicate while he was in school that there were problems?
Yes, he did have difficulty starting at the age of 8.
Okay.
And then through middle school and early high school, they put him in segregated classrooms.
Okay. And when they did that, was it because he couldn't interact with others or because he had some delays in development?
It was just because he didn't know how to handle the stress and interaction with others.
Uh-huh. Okay. And when they segregated him in those classes, did it help?
No.
Oh, okay. And did he ever get any other diagnoses besides the Asperger's?
Yes, a few.
Okay. And they were not correct, or have they proved to be correct over the
They were not correct at all.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry that happened to him. That's not pleasant for anyone. So now, how old is he?
He is 25 now.
Okay. And is it easier now for him to handle social situations?
Not really. I think he has adapted and coped in some ways, but in other ways it's even worse because he gets scared that people are looking at him, talking about him. He thinks that more people notice the things that are wrong or different about him than they really do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it accentuates everything.
And the sensitivity to noise and other people being close and working under, you know, stressful environments.
Mm-hmm. Has he been placed on any medication to help with any of this?
Yes, he is on a few.
Okay. And is that effective?
It is starting to balance out now.
Good. Good. And has therapy been part of the process for him to help him to learn how to cope in situations?
Absolutely, since he was 19.
Okay, okay. So when he has to go into a new social situation, are there things that he's got tools to help him prepare, or he just has to grin and bear it? I mean, how does he handle that?
The therapist gave him tools. Whether he uses them or not, that's a different story. I mean, sometimes he just avoids the situation.
Mm-hmm.
He's very into avoiding stress, but, you know, he grins and bears it, and, you know, there mm-hmm. may be some conflict later because he just didn't use the tools
right.
that the therapist gave him.
Right. And is it possible that he can get some kind of training or something that he could do some work where he wouldn't have to interact with the public?
He is involved with a vocational rehab right now. They're testing him to see what he would be good at. They have given him like an ASVAB test to see what field of work he would be good in. He's got what he does specifically, but he helps talk James through social situations and job interview processes and et cetera.
Okay, and how does he handle going there to interact with voc rehab?
I haven't actually been to voc rehab with him. His father does that, but it's just him and the voc rehab representative, so I think it's okay. I mean, he'll be nervous around anybody, but he's not so nervous when it's one-on-one.
Okay.
And with the other gentleman that helps him with the life skills, they meet at Barnes & Noble and before they open, so it's quiet.
Oh, that's very smart. I'm glad. I hope that the voc rehab person is trained in knowing how to deal with these kind of situations so it doesn't worsen the situation.
The gentleman is. He's very well known around here for Asperger's and autism disorders. And I've spoken to other kids James' age that have mm-hmm. Asperger's, and they say he's a lifesaver.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
I was lucky to find him.
Yes. So this must be quite an adaptation for the family to have to accommodate what your son needs, and because he's 25, he's going to be living at home probably. And how do you all deal with that?
I have younger school-age children, and they know brother's different. They don't really notice differences.
Mm-hmm.
They just think he's a teenager living at home,
okay,
going to work, going to school.
Okay.
You know, that, you know, we don't take extended trips. We don't take long car rides with him.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what, if your family has a certain, you know, thing they do, there's no, that's not odd to them. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you don't do something that's normal to you that they think it's odd.
Right.
So if we did, you know, do something different with James, they would be like, wow, this is weird.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, and do they interact with him okay?
Sometimes, sometimes. He's a little offstandish, so they know to steer clear.
Oh, okay. So it's learned behavior. They know how to avoid their big brother. Okay.
The oldest of the school-aged children, she likes him. She wants him to play games with her teacher stuff, but she also understands that he's busy and stressed, and
mm-hmm.
she has her own social, you know, life that, you know, doesn't require a big brother.
So. Oh, well, that's good. That's good. That's good. So what I often find is that people who have autism spectrum disorders have some very developed abilities, very artistic or creative writing, and usually very high intelligence. Is this the case in your son's situation?
He has a pretty high IQ. When we had him tested when he was 19, he's artistically talented as far as drawing with using different mediums, painting.
Mm-hmm.
He sketches a lot.
Okay.
And he likes to play games. He's very creative in making a map for a online role-playing game or, you know,
mm-hmm.
models and things like that. He likes to do models, and he likes to know how things work.
Uh-huh. Okay. And all his skills and abilities, is he able to use them? You said he has a job. Is he able to use them in the job setting, or is that something that is not compatible with his high intelligence?
It's not compatible yet. We're trying to find a good outlet.
Okay. Well, good. Is he open to that?
I think he's afraid of change.
Right. Right.
That gets in the way of, you know, this will be good for you. And he's like, but it's change, and I don't know.
Right, right. When I used to work with a three-year-old that was autistic and highly intelligent and OCD, I had to keep everything in the office exactly the same from session to session. If anything was out of place, he would have a meltdown. And there was a toy that got broken in between his session and the next one. That was not a very good session the next time.
Oh, no.
So I can understand about the change.
James is not so strict that you have to keep his schedule the same and his living situation the same. It upsets him. You see the stress, but it's not really, you know, on the outside. You just see that he's a little stressed out. He's a little bummed, but it's not, you know, huge for him like it can be for some on the spectrum.
Okay.
He does adapt eventually.
Okay. So when you're trying to help him to see something that would be of benefit to him, is he able to hear it, or is he shut off before you can even approach it?
Mostly he's shut off. Unless he's interested in it,
uh-huh.
he doesn't want to deal with it. He only thinks things that are relevant to him or worthy for him. And that could, I mean, I could say, you know, James, we're going to do something that benefits him, and he'll still be closed off.
Okay.
But, but, you know, sometimes he'll show interest.
Okay. So you have to be creative to come up with a way to approach it that's going to be something he will be open to hearing.
Well, I just, you know, I'm a mom, so I just say, look, this would be good for you, and we're going to try this. You know, if you don't like it, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I have to put the foot down and and tell him we're going to try it,
mm-hmm.
or it's, you know, not under negotiation.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but sometimes, you know, like, we can go for a hike, and he'll say, I want to do that more, and he'll shock us all. We're like, okay.
Uh-huh. My goodness.
So, yeah. He does shock us when we make him do something, and he likes it. So we're like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's challenging, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that parents should get an award for endurance and patience.
I know several moms that have multiple children, and just dealing with one is difficult to balance between him and not wanting to neglect my younger children's needs or his older brother's needs is a balance. It's definitely a balance. Plus, mm-hmm. keep the house in harmony. And, I mean, definitely if the house is in harmony, then James is in harmony. So...
yeah, it all works out. Yeah. All right, well, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about what's the most frustrating part. So let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Like 30 million other Americans, I have interstitial cystitis, a chronic inflammatory disease that feels like a bladder infection, or prostatitis for men. Desert Harvest Concentrated Aloe Vera helps. It appears to give analgesic properties while coating the bladder. It's the only one that has a phase one trial. It's whole processed, whole leaf, and extremely concentrated. Go to desertharvest.com to order or call 1-800-222-3901. Tell them Dr. Melanie sent you. 1-800-222-3901.
Nearly everybody struggles with some sort of addiction. It can be substance abuse, eating disorders, sexual addiction, or even something much less common. Tune into Addiction in America with host Rebecca Bullion every week to learn more about these and other addictions. Our goal is to educate you about these addictions in order to help you with regaining control in your life. Addiction in America is broadcast live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Let's hear more about what it's like to have an adult son with Asperger's. All right, I'm back here with Christy, who is the mom to an adult Asperger's person. And it's so challenging to deal with this kind of situation because he's 25, and yet socially he might be, what, 11, 12?
11 or 12, 13.
Uh-huh. So do you think it's possible for him to develop enough to where he can get closer to, say, 20 as a social person?
A few years ago, I had more hope. We've hit a really bad stumbling block recently that make me very concerned for his future.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully, this is just another hurdle. With Asperger's, you have a lot of hurdles, so this is just one more. Now it's up to him whether or not he wants to overcome it.
Mm-hmm. So in the 6 years that you've known what his diagnosis is, I guess you've researched a lot, learned a lot.
I've known for the past 12 or so years. I have a friend who also has a son with Asperger's. Of course, he's much younger. He's only 12. But I've researched since then, since finding out his diagnosis, and I knew a lot going, meeting my stepson, and I kind of sensed it immediately. Well, mm-hmm. not almost immediately, mm-hmm. that the diagnosis that I was told was wrong.
Yeah. And you came into this late in the game because he was already, what, 18, 17 when you met him?
He was 18.
Yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So it's for him to go all that time and to not have the family to know what it was, that must have been really hard for him, thinking there was something, you know, that wrong with me, but nobody was identifying it or helping it.
The family wasn't sure what to do.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't getting proper medical treatment. Obviously, with the wrong diagnosis, you can't get
right.
proper medical treatment. So, you know, he wasn't getting therapy. And he was supposed to be on medication for the previous diagnosis, but he didn't want to take them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was basically essentially a sitting duck.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, well, I will groom you, and I will help you learn life skills and how to cope. And of course, I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I had to enlist help.
Right. I'm glad you did. So, as a parent, what would be helpful to you? What do you wish was available for these kind of situations?
I wish that there was more legal, medical, therapeutic doors open for an adult with Asperger's. You go to a support group, and they're all parents of school-age children or younger.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing for an adult or even, you know, a child that's grown into an adult. There's no research. There's no opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
There's very limited opportunities. Let me say there's probably opportunities. There's limited opportunities. Finding the voc rehab took 4 or 5 years for me.
Mm.
And a lot of networking. You know, I finally just reached out and said, please help us. Please help us.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is the fact that he's an adult. I'm blocked from knowing a lot of his medical unless he signs a release.
Right.
So I can't help him. And when I go to his doctors and therapists, they're like, oh, but you're just the mom. Or you're
mm-hmm.
just, even worse, you're just the stepmom.
Mm-hmm.
When I've been there through the thick of it.
Yes.
And I get this door slammed in my face. Oh, you're just a stepmom. You know, we want to talk to his other mom.
Right.
And that's the difficult part. Is I know him better than his father and his mom because I spend more one-on-one with him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he hurts, I hurt. When he's stressed, I stress.
Mm-hmm.
And for the doctor to say, well, you're not helpful in this situation, or the therapist say, you're not helpful, that makes me feel like we take 3 steps back and he's not getting the help he needs.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not willing to listen to me, I live with him, I'm supporting him, I take him places, I make sure he gets to the doctor, yet they're telling me, oh, but you're not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, come live in my house for a day, then tell me that I'm not helpful. And my experience has been, and you might know or might not know about this, but military families, if you have an adult child living with you, there's all kinds of paperwork, hoops you have to jump through to have that adult child still be, like, allowed to live in military housing. So I don't know how much you know about that kind of stuff, but that can be so frustrating because the child cannot go out on their own. And I've had families I've dealt with in other states that I lived in that what were they going to do? And they had all kinds of diagnoses. Some it was bipolar. Some it was a stepchild to the military father. And it was very difficult. So I don't know if you know anything or had experience with that, but it's hard.
Yeah, I have heard stories through my networking of trying to get in touch with other moms
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
about the military resources and their rules and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I know they're there for a good reason. I'm not doubting that. It just, sometimes the rules don't apply in situations. So, yeah.
Just like the HIPAA laws, you know.
Yes.
I'm on a need-to-know basis, but I need to know because it's his health and he can't manage his own decisions. He can't function on his own. I've had people say, oh, just throw him out. Kick him out of the nest. He'll do fine. I'm like, he will crumble on the sidewalk.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
He can't function. He can't remember to eat. He can't remember to take a bath. We have to have a strict, structured schedule to get him to do the simplest tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But with HIPAA laws and military rules, it wouldn't be good for him.
Mm-hmm. How does he handle things like driving or public transportation or arranging a ride or getting to and from work? How does all that handle?
When I first met him, he was supposed to be taking the public bus, and it was very uncomfortable, so he would say he did, but he didn't. And with his brother, even, he would not like it very much. We're teaching him to drive slowly. He's easily distracted, and he doesn't know how to disconnect driving and turning, and
mm-hmm.
it's multifunctional, and it's not easy for him. But he's getting better. And his father and I just managed the rides. He lived closer to his job before, and he was getting coworkers or managers to help. And sometimes they will help, but it's getting less and less and less where he's not comfortable asking. He doesn't
mm-hmm.
like to ask for anything. He doesn't even like to ask for change.
Hmm.
So his father and I, mostly his father now, because I have, like I said, I have my own school-age children.
Mm-hmm.
We have to
shove
them around.
Okay. So what's the most frustrating part for you as a parent?
Getting my husband on the same page. He sees a little boy, his little boy, hurt little boy, and he wants to just baby him.
Mm-hmm.
And I come from a different way of raising, where my mother was more strict with me, and she, it was her way or the highway. And I'm not saying it's my way or the highway with my stepson. He is an adult, but he does live under my house, and I have to think about the younger children and what they're seeing, what they're
mm-hmm.
doing, and
mm-hmm.
and protect their innocence and help their childhood be flourished so they don't grow up hurt and damaged.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be a challenge for you. I know I keep saying that word, but that's very admirable for you to take on this, because I don't think you knew fully that was going to be part of the package when you married your husband.
Absolutely not. I married a man with adult children. One of them was on his way into the Army. The other one was, you know, getting started in life. And I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, they won't be a bother to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not a bother to me. It's just, you know, I'm raising another person's child.
Yes.
That I didn't think I was going to raise.
Right, right. Well, I'm very glad that you're willing to do that.
He is my child. I would give my kidney for him just like I would my own child. So
yes.
He is my child.
Yes, yes.
And he thinks of me as mom. He won't call me mom, but he thinks of me as mom.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good. So if there were to be some kind of supportive network for parents who have adult children like this, is that something you'd want to be a part of?
Yes, and I try to, there's Autism Speaks, and then another one locally that I try to, you know, sign up for the newsletters and try to keep tabs on them, and if there's any group meetings, I try. James being an adult and having autism, Asperger's and anxiety, he doesn't want to be in a group setting, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't overcome that hurdle of him just wanting to go to a group,
mm-hmm.
Sport group. But I that's how I cope, is I reach out to other moms, and I've come to know a few, you know, through Facebook and
mm-hmm.
and meetup.com and just, you know, oh, you know, oh, I got this friend, you know, it's just so easy to say, oh, I got this friend, and then I reach out, and, you know, we actually have a lot in common, so. But.
Oh, good. Well, maybe that's something through me, if people listening to this interview are interested in getting in contact with you and forming some kind of supportive network, would you be open to that?
I am open to that.
Okay.
Of course, I'd like to advocate and help other stepmoms, moms, children, parents of younger children, school-age children, toddlers, up to adults, because
mm-hmm.
I know what it's like to feel alone. I'm alone. You know, I feel alone overcoming, helping James and my husband overcome the hurdles that are Asperger's. It's an interesting life, and we will overcome it eventually.
Okay. Well, I thank you, Christy, very much. This has been very, very helpful, and I hope that people will reach out and want to connect with you. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, it's time to wrap up today's show. Remember, to help yourself, help someone else. Until next week, goodbye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.